Hello and welcome back to Let's Grow Girls, your favourite flowery podcast.
And we're at the end of the season, Sarah, season 7. How does that feel? I can't believe we got to the end of a whole nother season.
Hey, but it's an exciting one.
It's a very exciting one. This week we are joined by Becky, who works in the research department at David Austin Roses. Becky, I feel like you are my people here. I'm bringing Sarah over to the roses, but this episode is definitely driven by me.
I know, yeah.
But an absolute rose addict. We were just saying before we started this call that I've ordered another 4 roses yesterday in addition to the ones already coming. So I'm all ears for this episode. I'm very exciting. And what a dream place to work, right? David Austin Roses.
It genuinely is. I was very excited when I got the job. I had to pinch myself. It is amazing working here, I'm not going to lie.
I was about to say, did they pay you to say that? But I guess they can't do.
Well, yeah, they can pay me anyway. Hopefully they won't stop.
I'm sure.
It's like Rose Nirvana, isn't it? I went for the first time a few weeks ago and I thought, oh, you know, with it starting to get cooler, would it not be as magical? And it totally was.
You know what? I don't think rose hips get enough attention because everyone's all about the roses.
Now I'm obsessed.
June, but they're so beautiful, especially the rugosas in the species garden. They're just stunning.
I was like, well, I looked at them first and I was like, oh, they've got a lot of cherry tomatoes in here. And then realised they were fat, juicy rose hips and they looked amazing.
Amazing. They are beautiful. There's one of the Scottish ones, I think. It's almost like black cherries. They're just gorgeous.
Yeah, they're really pretty. And now I'm like, oh, now do I need to grow roses just for the hips?
Yes. Oh, here we go. Trying to push that. And you can put them in autumn wreaths if you get the bending one.
Oh, yes. Oh, she's selling us this one. Feel another episode coming on at some point. So we're going to talk to you about a couple of things today, both exciting, but we thought before we get on to the actual growing bit where we're going to talk about bare root season, which is now, we thought we'd talk to you something about, see, she told you I fluffed up, didn't she?
I didn't do though. I said you would do that.
You did. Carry on. So before we get chatting about bare root season, which I am mega excited for, we thought we'd talk to you about something super exciting, which happened earlier this year. I feel like, does it need a drum roll, Sarah?
I know, it's just another one.
You were involved in sorting out one of your first... Oh, God, what is wrong with my mouth again?
Oh, it's me. I've jinxed you.
You have. You were involved in your first stand for David Austin Roses at Chelsea Flower Show, which I feel like needs, like, actual clapping.
I feel like it does too, to be honest.
It's an incredibly... An event. How was that experience?
Memorable.
In one word.
I was slotted in quite late. I think it was March that I stepped in to take over the growing of the roses, which I was hugely excited about, but initially I was just going to help on the stand, so it was a slight change of plans. But I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe that I'm going to be growing the rose Chelsea flowers, and also having fans back at the same time, because it's an enormous responsibility.
Did you do anything to commemorate it? Like, did you steal one of the rose plants and are you going to keep that as your, like, your rose plant from Chelsea?
I didn't. You know, I was thrilled and relieved when it was over. I just got back on the train. I think I had a little nap. I missed the opportunity to steal something cool from Chelsea. That's terrible.
Not that we're encouraging theft.
Never.
But I mean, the stand looked amazing. Like, Chelsea is amazing, right? Yes. You know, everything always looks, you know, top notch. It is the, you know, premier event. But it was only my second year visiting Chelsea. So the first year I went, it was that weird COVID September show, and you weren't there. There was no David Austin there. I think quite a few brands missed that one, what with it being a weird time of year and a bit last minute.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of work, so I don't think it's something businesses can just do on the fly and decide to do at the last minute. You need to plan for it.
So I was gutted that there wasn't one in the first time I visited, so I was really excited when I knew it was going to be there this year, and it did not disappoint. I just can't get over how you made it look like a garden in the middle of a marquee.
I know. Well, it's actually the first time I'd ever been to Chelsea is whilst I was assembling the stand, and I was
no biggie.
No, like, yeah. I was getting whiplash looking around at everybody else's stands while putting ours together, because they're all so beautiful. Like the Great Pavilion, even before you get to the Great Pavilion, like the entrance off the main road, where you've got these beautiful floristry displays at the gate, and then you walk in and you've got vans and people carrying wood and people with badges and dodging your way through everybody to get into the marquee where your stand is, and then just being hit by like the smell, all the different shapes and sizes of the plants, people building these enormous structures and thinking, oh, what's that going to be? And then you sort of toddle over to your stand and get cracking on it, and you don't really look up again till 6 or 7 o'clock. We think, gosh, I'm hungry. What time is it? But it was good. In terms of making it into a garden, it all seems to come together in the last hour, honestly. Mm-hmm. So you come in, you get all the trucks unloaded, drag all your stuff into the marquee, make sure you've got your electricals and your internet, all those boring non-horticultural things. Then you put together your DIY parts of the stand, if you like, sort of the walls, the benches, the structures that you're going to put down into. And that's probably about 2.5 days before you get to putting plants in. When you've got a start, I think we were 170 square meters, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you come to drag out 800 roses and put them in, it is quite a lot to fill. 800,
just a few
15-litre pots, which all had to be unloaded and then reloaded after we were done. But I think we started in the centre with our new varieties. So obviously you want people to walk in and see those straight away, know where they are. Right. Then you sort, you put your big tall pieces in, so your ramblers on the entrances, your standards to give you that structure when you're looking at it. And then you sort of backfill with your shrub varieties. So you have a plan before you go. We put it all together on site before we try and assemble it at Chelsea. And when we've got all the bones in, we get out our plans of the varieties, and then we just start placing. You place them at different heights and different angles, because obviously they're plants in pots, but you want to make them look as if they're planted. So you're artificially creating sort of natural bush shapes and taller ones, smaller varieties, covering up like where you've got supports to hold the standards in place and upright. You're covering all of that so nothing's visible. So it's quite an art, the placing in part. And because you're literally in the borders, like in a tiny little square, bent backwards, trying to shove these like little Lego pieces into the plan, you don't actually sort of stand back and take it in till you're sort of doing the last pieces, like the edging and putting the gravel down and brushing things off. And then suddenly you step back and go, oh my goodness, look at the size of it. It's huge. Look at all the flowers. Everything's okay. Because as well, because the roses come in on the lorries, which are hot, and then I put in the marquee, which is even hotter, you have to hope that the buds you've got on them aren't going to go over before judging or during the week. So you're so busy looking at everyone going, this one's okay, that one's okay, that you don't look at it until you're almost ready to leave on the last night. And then it is an amazing feeling to see that all those months of hard work with a massive team of probably 20 people have come together, and it's okay, and you can walk away and it's done, and people can come and look at it. It's great. But yeah.
And talking of judging.
Yeah. I was about to say, it wasn't just Dan, was it?
No.
You got a gold.
We got our 26th gold, which is, was
that's
a
amazing.
Huge relief.
But your first gold.
My first gold, because if I had dropped the ball and then not gotten a gold.
Oh,
the pressure.
I don't think I would have been too popular.
But you didn't. And it was amazing.
Did it. And that was a wonderful feeling to think, oh my goodness, I've helped to get a gold medal at Chelsea. Actually, the first time I've ever seen it. So it's brilliant.
Aww. Yeah, that is definitely something to be proud of.
I am.
It's like a career tick, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It was huge. But I mean, it's not just me. I do the growing, but there's the team that book the lorries, the team that load things on, the team that drill it all together, sort out the internet connections, sell to people, pack the orders on site, the thankless job of packing it all back afterwards, because no one cares about that. Oh, we've got the gold now. All these people working really hard into the night, dismantling it and coming back at 3 a.m.
And then what happens to those plants? Do they get grown on for the next year? Or
yeah.
Do they like go back into the
For Chelsea
collection?
We have a Chelsea collection, if you like, which lives on a certain part of the site. It doesn't change too much. We get the new varieties in every year, which are added to it. Sometimes we take older varieties out if we think we have something better now. But it's all put together for a palette. So you have a colour palette that sort of works together and is complementary. Mm. You know, the odd ones that stick out. You want scents. So where you say have climbers in people's faces, you want them to be getting smell and colour from that. You want to be able to do artistic things with arches and climbing frames and shrubs. So you need different habits. So I think over a period of 30 years, we've sort of honed down and honed down all of our roses to a point where we know these are performers. And what's even more impressive is the age of them with these roses. Because some of them are like 5-10 years old, some of them are probably 15, and every year they get loaded on trucks, taken to London, manhandled, put back on trucks, brought back, and then they put on a fabulous show when we need it in May and look perfect and gorgeous and as if they haven't been through all that.
I always say how resilient they are.
In my head I'm like cartoonifying them. I'm just imagining them all in their little collection being like, guys, it's almost time, everyone get ready,
ready.
Let's get on the truck, we're going back. Back we go, everyone. Like, you're gonna be warm,
but
we'll be fine.
Holiday.
Yeah,
oh, that's gonna stick
they
in my head.
All year in all Brighton, and then it's like coach. Holidays,
yeah. And then they're all like, right, smile and wave, boys.
That is quite a thought. Before we move on to talking about bare roots, you obviously just mentioned there when you were like planning the site for Chelsea, new roses. So last year there was a couple of absolute stonkers. I have both. I love both.
Of course you do.
I'm like an actual addict. like, is there going to be new ones this year?
Yes.
I feel like if you told us what they were going to be, that might be a cause for being fired.
I don't even know because it is top secret. Probably won't even find out in-house till next year.
Okay, so there's not what... So it would be next season that they come out. Yeah. Yes, that makes sense. So
I think they probably get launched around Chelsea time because we like to make a show of them, obviously, and give people the opportunity to get in amongst them and smell them and look at them. Well, yeah, they're really good releases this year. Elizabeth, which is so healthy. It's really
a pretty colour. Yeah. She's not great for a cut flower. I know lots of our listeners are listening about cut flowers, but she makes a beautiful garden flower. But Bring Me Sunshine, that makes a good cut flower.
It does. It's got huge long stems. It's got a massive plant. It's very bold as well. It's got quite a nice late summery autumn kind of yellowy orange tone to it, which is lovely.
Is Elizabeth going to be available for bare root season?
I think
random question.
So yeah, I would expect.
I just obviously now after the sad passing of Queen Elizabeth, I think I might add that one to my collection. That might be a nice keepsake. Of course,
you
think I should, Nicole.
Yes, I'm up.
Can be rose enabler.
Okay, that's a plan.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely, it's always very exciting in house to see what the new ones are.
Do you get like a sneak release before they come out to the public, or is it?
No, we don't really.
We
pretty much find out at the same time. We can find out a bit earlier in the sense that we have to process them. So if we're sending out as bare root or potted, they'll be coming through us. But yeah, it's kept very hush hush.
No leaks. No. Nobody can be allowed to know.
Take it very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? Goodness me.
Well, and I guess before we get onto the bare root minor interrogation,
yeah, okay.
It's really interesting to hear about like your background. So what background do you have?
It's probably not what you might expect. I've been involved in horticulture for 6 years. Before that, I was a trainee property surveyor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my first horticultural job. Yeah. My first job in horticulture was as a volunteer with the National Trust, which I loved and was absolutely wonderful. And then I got a job as gardener and then head gardener at another independent rose nursery. And then came to Austin's because why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
If you love roses, it's the place to be. And luckily, I live very locally, so I'm spoiled in that sense.
I wonder how that happened. I feel like you were like, oh, what a surprise. Moving,
it was destiny.
Going to move next to it.
Why would I not? Yeah.
If you see me moving that end of the country, you know why.
And then, so what is it you do at David Austin?
So I did work on production, so I would have been one of the people mm-hmm. handling your bare root roses and your potting roses and dispatching them. And this year I have moved to research and development, so looking at the best possible ways for us to grow our roses and make sure they are healthy and resilient and we're efficient as environmentally friendly as possible.
That sounds like a big job.
Small job.
It's great. I'm really, really passionate about all of it and I feel very spoilt to get the opportunity to do it all day, every day.
And
jealous at all.
And you also get to wear like the really cool David Austin uniforms that we've all seen.
I do have the fleece. Yeah. My fleece only comes out for shows because I get very dirty and it's far too nice to be wearing every day. We have some very nice uniform, I have to say.
You are spoiled. I saw them when I was at the garden and I think I said when we were chatting before, but normally when you go to these gardens it's like everyone in high vis jackets, you know, and that kind of thing, and it really, this is how like thing I am about gardens, I think it spoils the look of the garden.
It's like I have a thing about fire exit signs, which obviously necessary, but they're so visible.
Do they have to be so fluorescent?
Honestly, I do know what you mean. They are necessary because nobody wants to get run over by a tractor. They do kill the vibe a bit. Luckily, in the gardens, we don't have any rogue tractors, so we can just blend in with the environment a little bit more, which is nice.
They're really nice. I thought maybe a gardener will just leave one hanging on a spade somewhere and I can.
They do sometimes. You want to wait till the summer, they're more inclined to take their layers off if you can just do one.
Top tips how to get yourself a David Austin fleece.
Look for those spades.
So I think we should get on to the main event, bare roots. It is bare root season, which feels a bit nuts this year. Everyone, I don't know if it's because I've joined some like David Austin Facebook groups and stuff, but everyone was ready for bare roots and they were crazy. I was less crazy. Like, you wouldn't have expected me to be less crazy, but there are, you know, they were on it this year. You know, everyone wants the good varieties, don't they? When we said we were going to talk bare roots, there was a kind of a bit of a conversation about myth busting almost, wasn't there? So we asked the listeners for some of their like questions and queries on bare roots, because I think there are some myths obviously based on what they came back with us. So we thought we'd do a bit of myth busting, but we thought it'd be good to start with talking about what exactly a bare root is and how and why it's different from a potted rose.
So a bare root,
it's a big place to start, right?
It's exactly what it says on the tin. It's a rose which has been pulled from the field that it's been grown in. Literally, if you pull the rose out of the ground, that is what it is. So your roots, your stem, we cut it back so that it can go into storage and be sent out because it's easier. That's all it is, yeah. Just the plant and nothing else. No potting media, no pots, just the pure rose itself.
So when you send the potted ones out, they are essentially the bare root that's been put into a pot.
So
they're not any different in terms of, or are they different in terms of the age of them or the are they better? I think was a lot of the questions that came past. Like there was a few people said they heard like the bare roots were older, therefore might be better. Some thought they were younger and wouldn't flower as well. There was all those kinds of
questions.
It's
very subjective. So if we start from the beginning, we grow roses in the field. We pull them out come bare root season. They come onto site and we'll individually grade them by hand and make sure that they meet our quality requirement. And then they will be given a very quick trim because we then bundle them up for storage. So obviously trying to pull an individual rose out of 200, if they're not tied up, it's going to be a bit of a nightmare. You could be there all day. They go into cold storage. How long they're in there depends on how many orders we get. So obviously we want to keep the stock in the cold stores rotated. So we will get them out of cold stores and sent out to the customer as quickly as we can. And then more will come in and go into the cold store. So it's a rotation basis. So you don't have the same roses that come out in October sat there until March. They come slowly over a period of months. The first roses that go out will be bare root retail to customers who have ordered them the previous year or started to order them now. And then they'll go to the garden centres and during that period, say when we get to about January, we'll start potting those bare root roses. So they will be older in the sense that they may have been sat in the cold stores, or they may have come in, gone through grading and gone straight into the pot. But we don't start potting until January. They're not different. They are the same roses. It's just they've been put into potting media because at a certain point, the roses are going to come out of dormancy, whether they're in a cold store or not. You have quite a long period, but you don't grow roses in a fridge. So that's not where they're meant to be. And we want that first growth to be healthy growth. We want our customers getting every single flower that that rose has to offer during the year. So the potted plants are only different in the sense they've been taken out of the cold store, perhaps a bit later, put into potting media and then put out into the sunshine on the beds to crack on with growing. That's not better or worse. One thing I'd say about bare root roses is they are cheaper because we haven't got the cost of the potting media, of the pot, of looking after it on site, of the extra weight when we then send it out. So our costs reflect that. If you want to save much part of the hedge of roses, I'd always say go bare root because you're going to be saving so much money doing it that way. And it is good to plant them out in the autumn. Well, yeah, anyway, anytime really. You can plant out a bare root rose anytime. You just won't be able to get them after April.
Yeah. So. Yeah, just dipping back to the bit around, you know, obviously you're saying you reflect them in your cost. They are significantly cheaper to buy bare root and root rose, get my words out properly, but they are also you can buy them in bulk, can't you? So when you buy more, you get a further discount. You know, we are going to talk about a discount code for our listeners at the end of this episode as well, but they do work out much more beneficial price wise but also, you know, you mentioned the things like the pot, the media, they are actually a more sustainable way of buying roses.
Absolutely.
As well, I think, you know, better for
the environment. Have much lower footprint than the potted roses. It's not that the potted roses are bad, but they've just had far more resources thrown at them than the bare root, which are coming straight from the field here and then out to the customer who's going to plant them. So they are more environmentally friendly.
So there's no plastic pots that you've got to do something with, no extra soil, so it does work out like a nice way. And what I always like about the David Austin stuff is they come with you know, in the brown paper bags.
Yeah, they're
can be
really
composted
good.
And even those little plastic things that they come in,
do you remember the potato puff from years ago when I was a kid? They really smell like that, those biodegradable bags. Every time I open one, I was like, nostalgia. But yeah, they're absolutely brilliant. We're really good on our biodegradable packaging.
We spoke about how you obviously dig them up and put them in the stores, so they're the exact same roses. So one of the myths that came through was that they are older in terms of how long they've been growing at David Austin for. So some people said, like, you should get a bare root rose because it's going to flower much better next year because it's 3 to 5 years old, but the potted ones are only 1 year old. And I thought, they're not. Yep. They're just all the same one. Some end up in a pot eventually because they've been in the cold store enough time, and others don't.
No, they're all,
it's not any different in terms of
they're
age.
They're all the same age, taken from the same fields. It's just we have a certain percentage that go out as bare root. Then obviously we still need to be able to sell stuff for the rest of the year. We can't just cut people off in April. So it's literally the same rose, the same age that you would have had if you bought it bare root, but now it's in a pot because it can't stay in the store anymore.
You say that, but you still got to pot it somewhere else. Still got to go somewhere else. It can't live in the little green David Austin pot.
No, it definitely can't live in that little pot. No, no. It will have a nice, hopefully established root ball on it, though, when it's sent out to you as a potted rose. So in that sense, it will have a little more to it than a bare root. It'll have some more fibrous roots and it'll have settled into its pot. But bare root roses take really quickly. And the only thing if you get a bare root is obviously it's in your garden sooner. So you're going to see growth sooner because you could get your... Say you get your bare root rose in 3 weeks, but you're not going to be able to get a potted rose until April. So you will have already had that rose in the ground for 4 months more than if you'd bought it potted. It's only older in that sense. The amount of time before it's been put up the soil is the same field rose.
And even though it doesn't look like it's doing much above the soil in those winter months, the party's happening below.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, it'll be getting established into the ground, it'll be getting his little fibrous roots into the soil, making sure it can feed itself water and nutrients and getting established, which is all good.
I've planted many a bare root in my time, but for those people who are kind of new to it and a bit afraid about what to do, because it is a bit weird when you open the bag and it essentially looks like weird. Some twigs, right? You know, when you get the potted ones, they've usually got some growth on them and, you know, they look more alive as opposed to these twiggy things that turn up. But David Austin's got lots on the website. There's lots of videos on how to do it. But the sort of basic premise of it is quite easy though, right? Do you want to just give us a little nutshell of what you do when your twigs turn up?
Absolutely. So when your twigs turn up, as soon as possible, really, stick them in a bucket of water, because obviously they've been in transport for possibly 24 hours. We do try and send them out twice a day as quickly as possible on the fastest service. But stick them in a bucket of water, say for at least 2 hours. The most important thing is, if you haven't already thought about it, think about where you want to put it. Is it getting 6 hours of sunlight, unless you picked a shade rose? Is it somewhere you're going to see and smell it? Is it going to be getting in the way? Is it going to have thorns? Sort of before you start digging a hole just anywhere because you're excited, like, oh, rose, because I've done it. Think about it. Is it going to be happy? Are you going to be happy where you're putting it? When you've decided, make sure there's not too much around it, because roses don't like to be too crowded. That's not to say you need to leave 5 foot around them, but sort of give, say, a foot and have the rose in the middle, so it's not in competition with anything for light or nutrients, and it's going to be able to get straight in. Dig your hole. It obviously wants to be deeper than the size of the root ball or the roots if you get in a bare root. So a couple of inches deeper. It's good to watch the YouTube videos because you can get a visual. We do it in the video so you can see what's happening. Dig your hole, break up the bottom with a fork, and that's just to make it easier again for the roots to take hold rather than trying to get into potentially compressed soil. It's nice and loose so those soft fibre roots can get in. Add some soil improver if you want to, just to make sure you've got all your macro and micronutrients in the soil. That sounds a bit scary. It's not. I mean, roses will grow in most soil as long as they're retaining moisture. It's just giving it some vitamins, if you like, giving it the best possible start, because it's just a baby, to get started in the ground. Mycorrhizal, if you want to, put it around the roots and put it in the bottom of the hole. Mycorrhizal is the fungi which attaches itself to the roots. Very cool stuff. It will sacrifice itself in a drought because it's there to, it's like a symbiotic relationship. It helps the plant to get water and nutrients. In the case of a drought, it will sacrifice itself to the existing root system. So it's quite cool stuff.
Oh.
So you've got all those lovely things in your hole. You've got your bare root placed. You want your knuckle sort of level with the soil. You don't want it too high so it's flapping about in the wind. And you don't want it too low so you're covering up the growth. So sort of...
And the knuckle is the bit, otherwise known as the union.
Yeah, where the grafted rose has been attached to the root stock and where it's going to start growing from. If you grab it in between the roots and the bottom of the stem, it'll sort of be in the middle of your fist, the knuckle. It's a natural grabbing place, is the easiest to think of. If you're going to pick up a rose, that's going to be where you're going to grab it. So you want that bit sat level in the soil. And then just backfill, firm it in again so it's not wobbly and it's secure in the ground, and give it a good water. That is the essential thing with roses. They like a fair bit of water when they're getting established. It's not so much of an issue if you're planting it now, but say if you were planting a potted rose in June and it's hot and it's got flowers and it's taken up a lot of water and nutrients, you really want to keep on top of your watering, sort of be checking it daily, and if it's looking dry or limp in any way, get your watering can out and give it a going over. And that's it, really. Just dig a hole, put it in, shove it all back. Ta-da!
See, actually, I think it's easier than a potted rose, because like you say, when you're normally planting a potted rose, you're fighting against the warmth, aren't
you?
Yeah,
sometimes you're fighting against,
I hear a lot of people,
the size of it as well, because the good thing about bare roots, they're about 6 inches and you're not wrestling hitting the face with it when you're trying to plant it. It's quite nice and easy.
Trying to plant a potted Harlow car is like I've been in a fight with a cat.
It's very prickly.
But yeah, that was one of the big questions we had actually about where does the union go, because I think some people in slightly colder climes were worried about if that grafted area was like really exposed, could the rose end up becoming damaged?
No, I mean, roses are meant to be grown outside. We grow them in fields. Mm-hmm. They are exposed. They are fairly tolerant to most outdoor conditions. People get quite worried about roses, but honestly, they're so hardy. You can do quite a lot to them and get away with it. As long as you water them and feed them if they need it, that's it really. Anything else is negotiable. If you prune it and make a mistake, don't worry about it. It's going to grow back. Like, if you planted it and it's not falling over and it doesn't look like a cat's just tossed it in the hole and backfilled it, like, if it looks firm and stable, you're going to be fine.
Excellent.
I like that. Low-key gardening. It's my kind of gardening.
That's
as long as it's
vibe.
In the ground.
Yeah, if it's like, not upside down, make sure you got it the right way.
Yeah, make sure the twigs end up the right way. And bare roots are just as good for pots as the ground, aren't they? If you get the varieties that like being in a container, they don't have to be a pre-containerized one to go
no,
in a container,
absolutely
do they?
Not. And obviously, the longer something's in a container, the more chance you've got it getting root bound and having to move it onto something bigger. But they're absolutely fine to go in a container. Just check on the website when you're ordering that it says suitable for containers. I mean, anything will be all right in a container for a while, but if you're keeping in it long term, then you want something that's going to be happy for the life of it in a container.
Mm-hmm. And once we've chucked our sticks in the ground, because it's not more technical than that, right?
Just
it's an easy job.
Just casually tossing it at all. Right?
Just casually tossing them
in. You're going to regret saying this.
Once we've lovingly placed them in our hole and backfilled them and wished them well, do we need to do anything else to them? Because obviously they're just going to go kind of stay dormant over winter. When do we need to think about fertilising them over the winter, or are we just literally leaving them alone until it's time for them to wake up again in the spring?
Other than putting some soil improver in the hole, like, so you could use Cars Organic, which is sort of manure, straw and bark, which invigorates the soil structure and the fertility. Other than that sort of thing, we don't normally feed or fertilize the roses when they're in dormancy, because if you encourage soft new growth, which a lot of feeds are sort of nitrogen heavy and designed to do that, you've got that lovely soft tender growth and then you're going to get a frost and it's not going to do it any good at all, and the plant's going to have to start over again. So I would steer clear of giving it any food until sort of April, May time, when you're looking at naturally developing leaves and buds.
Excellent. So I think that is
A thorough interrogation,
and hopefully we've answered a lot of the questions the listeners were keen on for bare roots. But they did have a couple of other questions, not about bare roots, but about roses in general. And actually, one of the like big things that came up, which I'm almost reluctant to ask because I don't believe there's a cure without going mad on the chemicals, but it was treating black spot. Do you have any tips for black spot?
First tip is buy a variety that's not prone to it, because some older ones are prone to specific fungal diseases. If we're keeping it fairly basic, which I think is the right thing to do for domestic gardening, because I don't think you want to be spending a lot of time messing about. You want to be able to enjoy what you've planted. The best thing I've always found is with fungal diseases, it's normally due to humidity and overcrowding. So keeping it simple, you want to have an air circulation around your rose. So as we talked about when planting, you don't want to be overcrowded by other plants. When you're pruning it, you want to create a nice open structure. So if you've got a lot of crossing branches in the centre, or it's looking very congested and you've really got a lot going on in the middle of the rose, just remove those so that when the wind blows through, it's taking any spores with it. Hygiene is another one. So if you're having black spot and at the end of the season, all your leaves have fallen off the plant and they're sitting around the bottom of the rose getting wet, those rain spores are splashing back up onto the underside of new leaves and reinfecting the plant. So at the end of the season, if you've got a rose that's been a bit prone to disease, take all of that away off the top. Don't compost it, stick it in your green bin, get rid of it off-site because it's infected plant material, and strip any infected leaves off the plant. I know that sounds quite harsh, but I have stripped whole plants, every single leaf off, and they grow back really fresh and nice and healthy because you've removed that infection that's sat in the plant and it's clean now, so it tends to grow back well. There's always going to be a risk of it at certain times of year, particularly you're going to see it this time of year. Your leaves are going to deteriorate on your roses because they're going into dormancy. They are naturally going to die. They're not as healthy and vigorous, so you are going to get something if it's knocking about, just like you get colds in the winter. Mm-hmm. If you've got a rose that's ready to drop its leaves anyway, they're going to look a bit gnarly. They probably are going to get a little bit of fungal or whatever's going around if it's still quite warm but wet and they're quite crowded. So be a little bit tolerant of that as well. Don't expect too much, right? You're not going to get the same now as you would be seeing in June. Your rose is tired. It's ready to go to sleep for the winter. So yeah, air circulation around the plant and within the plant, plant hygiene, and just bearing in mind the weather conditions and the time of year. As you know, you can only fight the weather to a certain extent. It's very rarely a huge problem with roses. It's normally just an aesthetic thing which occurs at certain times of the season. I wouldn't particularly worry about it unless you find your rose is looking really atrocious. And if you're doing all of the right thing and it's still getting it, I would replace it with something else because it might be a variety that's just a bit vulnerable.
I just wanted to point out a pun you kind of made, which is atrocious.
Thank you. It's nice to appreciate it.
Yeah. My pun. Yeah. That was good. That was a good pun.
I think that's it, isn't it? Sometimes, like, we talk about this in all of our episodes, it's about the right plant in the right place. Absolutely. Sometimes, and if that's not happy there, then it's just, maybe it's just not the one for you.
Yeah, and also I think sometimes we expect too much. Like, we have very healthy roses, but people need to appreciate that even here we will get diseases on site and in the gardens, and we treat them. You're not necessarily doing anything wrong, just like you can't be perfectly healthy all of the time. Sometimes you'll get a cold. Just be a little bit tolerant of it. Unless it's looking truly dreadful, just accept that it's natural. Like, obviously you want to avoid it. And pruning and hygiene are huge things, but also just be a little bit forgiving if you do get the odd little gnarly leaf. It isn't the end of the world. It's just something that's unavoidable sometimes.
And kind of on that link to diseases, pests. Mm-hmm. This year, I was in a half losing battle with the sawflies.
Oh really? Oh. We don't get many of those here.
Oh, they are just naughty little things. But I found nematodes really helped for them.
Okay.
Yeah, so they really made a difference for me, but they are horrid little things, aren't they? Like, how they just like bury themselves in the stems and they come out and scoff everything.
They do. It's been quite a good year for pests because obviously it's been quite dry, so they haven't had to put up with the weather. We genuinely see virtually no sawfly here. I think it can be a sort of a bit of a regional thing. But yeah, again, with pests, it depends. We try and be quite tolerant because obviously we're moving away in horticulture as a whole from insecticides, pesticides, fungicides, all of that stuff. There are biological treatments that you can use for certain pests, but sometimes that's more appropriate in a commercial environment because it can be quite expensive. Like, it's one thing to say, oh, you've got aphids apart from ladybirds, which is great, but that costs a lot of money. So it's quite good if you can encourage natural predators for your pests in your garden. And obviously, we all like to see a bit of biodiversity. But again, my little bugbear of mine is things like caterpillar damage. It's not great, obviously, but if we want butterflies, then we have to live with caterpillars. So it's trying to accept if it's not major damage. Obviously, no one wants their rose covered in aphids from the top to the bottom because it's dreadful and it won't do the plant any good. But if it's a little bit of damage that you can live with, sometimes it's good for the garden to just accept it and grit your teeth.
I feel like I probably should admit this is somebody who works at David Austin, but I particularly am a fan of the power hose on the aphids.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, like when we've got aphids on the show roses, that hose is going out, definitely.
Oh, good, I do what you do. That makes me feel so much better.
I feel quite good about the hose. I like to use the...
it's so satisfying watching the little...
I feel bad.
I won't use the aphids. The little horrors.
Yes, but sometimes they have to go. There are times where they really need to go, and I definitely have had the hose out and been there taking them off by hand, shall we say.
And I have been known to relocate a ladybird or two. I've never bought ladybirds, but I sometimes carry them on a leaf over
that.
To wherever I want them
sometimes
to have
dinner. If there's roses in the hedges and I see ladybirds, I'll come out and I'll take them and I'll carry them over to the Chelsea roses and be like, go on, eat those.
well, they like them, so that's no bad thing. And I'm always surprised, like, this is a mad statistic, isn't there, that they can eat like 200 times their body weight or something in aphids.
Apparently, ladybird larvae are the ones. They eat even more than the adults. Yes. They really consume them. But also, quite a few of the biological controls are carnivorous. Like, they will eat themselves if they run out of food. And ladybirds are one of them.
Oh, my goodness. They eat themselves. That's scary.
But there's also other things that eat aphids, I try and remember.
Lacewing.
I mean, I'm not a bird. Oh, and I'm not a bird person, but birds
do, but they also poo on your roses, which makes me very cross.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
But I don't know which birds, but I've got some, or I did have some nice birds in my garden. So if my houseplants got aphids, I would put them out and sacrifice the aphids to the birds that live in the garden.
It's very ritual, isn't it?
And I would watch them come down and clean them off. Yeah, and then I would bring them back into the house once my aphid problem
was cleared up. That's quite satisfying. I love that. I think how environmentally friendly it is.
Yeah, and it was like a deal. Like, I'm like, I bring you something, you do something for me. It's like,
I love it.
You know, it's like an agreement between me and the birds.
The way.
Oh, look at us with our mad gardener tactics. I think you can't be a gardener without having like some crazy secret tips, right?
Yeah, I think we all go out there and talk at the plants and carry little bugs around and offload them into other places. It's through love, that's what it is.
It is, that is exactly it. So we are coming to the end of the episode now. I think the other questions that we had come through from the listeners were a lot around what to do with new roses in spring, but I think we could probably look at trying to cover that in another episode if you'll come back to us, Becky. And then there was lots of questions about your favourites, which we're going to cover in the super secret side episode for our Patreon subscribers shortly. But we have one last question for you before we give the listeners the lovely discount code. And this is Sarah's question. I've never asked it in 7 series. It's always been
Sarah's
question.
I feel quite intimidated, okay.
You should, it's very serious. No, so if you could give people one piece of advice going forward, what would it be?
Oh, God. One piece.
I know.
I think it would be bare root roses are the way. Bare root roses are the future. I'm going to say it there. They are so easy to plant. They are cheaper. They're more environmentally friendly. And you don't miss one single leaf or flower on that plant. That is my top tip.
You heard it here, people.
Why would you not want 100% of the joy?
For less of the money and kinder to the environment.
You feel good about it.
It's a win-win all around.
You can tell yourself you need to buy it because it's good for the environment. Think of all the roses you're saving to moon potting.
Well, if that wasn't a reason to get them, then we are sold. And like I said, we have been very, very kindly given a discount code from David Austin Roses, which will give you 15% off. And that 15% can be used if you get the tea rose discount for hedging or just the multiple ones. So it is an excellent deal. And the code is LETSGROW15, so let's grow 15. And it's valid for 2 weeks from the date of this episode going out, which is the 14th of October that the episode will be launched. So you have got it until the 28th of October. And not only is the discount valid in the UK, but it's also valid for our EU listeners. So
Nicole, have we just made it?
I feel like having a David, we have our own personalised David Austin discount
code.
Is pretty cool.
Okay, it's fine. I'm over fangirling. I'm just a little, just a small one, and then I'm going to be over it.
Well, I mean, I think I've managed to keep it together quite well for this episode, considering what a fangirl I am. Are you proud of me?
Yeah, really proud. This is like your dream episode. I feel like we should have jokingly said that it was my episode and how I dreamed of running this, because I feel like everyone knows you're the Rose Lady.
But it has been so lovely chatting to you, Becky. We've been looking forward to this for some time. So thank you so much for coming on. I actually spoke about this way back when with the team over at David Austin back in May.
My goodness.
So I've been excited about this for months.
And buying a million roses in the meantime.
That was the plan.
I'm on the way.
Hanging on.
I mean, do you want to know what I did buy before we move on to Secret Side episode? I bought two Shropshire Lads, which I'm really sorry, but those are one of the archive varieties. I also bought, because I have, I feel like I shouldn't admit this to you either, but I have Coco Loco, which is a non-day rose. It is beautiful, but somebody suggested Julia's rose to me as the kind of David Austin similar alternative in terms of colour. So I ordered her, and I ordered another Emily Bronte because you just can't have enough of her, right?
So healthy.
For reference, so how many roses do you have now, Nicole?
We don't talk about that.
Okay. And are they all in pots still?
No, I've got quite a few now at the allotment. So I've got, I think I've probably got about 10 in the ground at the allotment.
Are you hiding those so you don't have to confess to buying them? Or are they been turfed out for new ones?
No, Tom doesn't see them. They're the secret roses. No, my husband does actually come down the allotment too, but they're there because I want them to get really big and healthy and really happy, and they are also some of the discontinued varieties, so I want them to have like the most chance of being happy being in the ground.
I just like the idea, like the image of you, like the David Austin box arrives and Tom's like, what's that? And you're like, nothing.
That's so big as well.
It's just the electricity. It was just the electricity, man. Well, and then you sneak them down to the allotment, and then you plant them, and like you can clearly see the soil has been moved and they're freshly planted. But when Tom's like, where did they get here? You're like, no, they've always been
there. Came with the plot.
Always had to.
I'm not going to lie, I haven't not done that before, but not with roses, because I like Tom to come and dig the hole for the roses, you see. But what was quite funny a couple of weeks ago, which I was so touched by, unfortunately my dog died recently, and the very lovely people at David Austin sent me a Desdemona, like, in, so I could plant it in tribute to her, which I just thought was so, so sweet. And but it turned up and I didn't know it was going to turn up, and my husband was like,
I didn't, it wasn't me, I didn't do it.
I was like, honestly, this time it wasn't me. I got a lot of side eye, but thankfully it came with a little gift card so I could prove my innocence.
Oh dear.
But I don't know what I'm going to do about these new ones turning up, as well as goodness knows what else is coming.
Tom's got to get digging.
And then I've got pots at the allotment as well, a few in pots, and then I've got a few like lovely terracotta pots at home with them in as well. But I just like, I buy and then worry where they're going later.
Yeah. I have, it's difficult when you work here, because every time you go on a new job, like, oh, but this one, like, oh no, this one's my favourite now, oh, look at that one. And that was far too many.
It's very tough, but we're going to talk about all your favourites now over on the Super Secret Side episode for our Patreon subscribers. If you're not a subscriber and you'd like to know more about that, you can go and visit the website. We'll put the link in the notes, and it's on our Instagram bio too, and then you can find out more about how you do that and hear about all of our guests' favourite flowers. So I will leave this here and say thank you again,
thank you,
Becky. We have loved chatting to you. Me more than Sarah, maybe, but thank you very much. It's outro time.
Thank you so much for listening and for your support. We are loving this season so far.
And we hope you are too. If you love the episode as much as we love doing it, then we would be so grateful if you left us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also subscribe, and you can find us on Instagram for more of our adventures at Let's Grow Girls Podcast.
We're really grateful having you here listening to all of our interviews with our amazing guests, and we hope that you carry on enjoying the rest of the season.
See you next week. Bye!
You sounded really far away when you said that. You sat back.
Yeah, because I didn't want to shout at our people, you know.